Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, striking down the FCC's net neutrality rules in a victory for Verizon, who brought the suit, and the phone and cable giants who, given their monopoly power, will soon be able to impose their content on consumers and deny their customers the content they have been used to accessing on the previously free and open Internet. Craig Aaron, the president and CEO of Free Press, joins us to discuss the tremendous implications of this ruling and its disastrous impact on free speech, free access to information, and consumer choice. Then we will speak with West Virginia resident Russell McIver, the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter, about the corporate-friendly politics of West Virginia and the embrace of the mantra of deregulation that has led to lax and non-existent oversight of coal and chemical companies who have bought almost all of the politicians and most of the press in the state. With growing public outrage over the chemical spill that has kept 300,000 residents without water for days, we will discuss efforts to organize third-party candidates to run against corporate-friendly Democrat and corporate-owned Republican incumbents. Then finally, we will look into the verdict in the case of the acquittal of two Fullerton police officers for the beating death of an unarmed, mentally ill homeless man who repeatedly begged for his life as he was tasered, bludgeoned, and kicked to death. Adolfo Flores, an Orange County reporter with the Los Angeles Times, who has been covering the trial of the officers who killed Kelly Thomas, joins us to discuss the verdict and a possible backlash as happened with a similar verdict after the beating of Rodney King. And joining us now is Craig Aaron, the president and CEO of Free Press. He is the editor and co-author of Changing Media, Public Interest Policies for the Digital Age. And before joining Free Press, he was an investigative reporter for Public Citizen's Congress Watch. Welcome to Background Briefing, Craig Aaron.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
And today, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit ruled against the FCC and in favor of Verizon, saying that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, does not have the power to mandate so-called net neutrality rules. And I have tried to cover this issue for years now, Craig, given the inadequate nature of the term net neutrality. It barely begins to describe the full significance of this issue. So starting with that in mind, what's your reaction to this ruling?
Well, obviously, I'm very disappointed in the ruling. I think it's a very dangerous ruling that really puts the free and open Internet as we've had it in jeopardy. And I think the fault for this decision, though, really does rest with the Federal Communications Commission, which has pursued this court case on very weak ground and didn't take a number of steps they could have to have gone in with a much stronger case against Verizon. And their inability and really their lack of political will to tackle these serious problems has really put the entire Internet in jeopardy. So, you know, net neutrality, the basic idea of net neutrality, the principle of net neutrality is just that when you go online, you should be able to go wherever you want, do whatever you want, download whatever you want, and it should not be up to your phone or cable company or internet service provider to decide which websites are going to work and which aren't. But because of the FCC's missteps, today the court has opened the door to allowing a Verizon or an AT&T or a Comcast to block websites they don't like, to discriminate and speed up or slow down content they like or don't like, and to really begin transforming that free and open Internet that we all rely on into something that looks a lot more like cable television, where a few big companies can pick and choose what channels you get and what kind of news and information are going to get a priority.
So how much is this to do with the fact that the new FCC chairman, Tom Wheeler, was a former lobbyist for the big telecom giants?
Well, it's not Tom Wheeler's fault yet. Really, the problem here is with Mr. Wheeler's predecessor, Julius Genachowski, who the last time this very same court questioned the FCC's authority, he faced a choice. And that choice was whether to go back and reverse a series of really disastrous decisions made during the Bush administration, or to go back into court essentially making the same arguments that lost in the previous case. And unfortunately, he chose the latter path. So instead of reclassifying, is what it's called, instead of reclassifying broadband under the law and treating our broadband networks as they had always been treated from the beginning, he tried this much more narrow path, and it didn't work. Now, Mr. Wheeler is the one whose desk this is going to land on next, and he'll have to decide whether the FCC appeals this decision to the Supreme Court and whether he has the political will to take on the powerful phone companies and reverse the bad decisions of his Republican and Democratic predecessors and actually protect Internet users. Some of the things he said so far indicate that he might be willing to take on that fight. Other things suggest that he may not. So this is where the next big fight is going to be, right back at the Federal Communications Commission. And the question will be whether Mr. Wheeler will stand up for Internet users, or whether, again, the FCC will just be doing favors and really fulfilling the wish list of the most powerful phone and cable companies.
And Craig Aaron, it was the Bush administration's appointee to the chairmanship of the FCC, Michael Powell, the son of Colin Powell, who gave away the store and flew around in Warner Brothers jet and couldn't wait to be a hireling and a toady to corporate power. But you're saying that the giveaway of Michael Powell's, rather than challenge that, Jenikowski took the wrong route. And now,
exactly.
And that's where we are at today.
Yeah, that created the mess we have now. So the original sin does rest with Michael Powell, the same Michael Powell who is now the cable industry's top lobbyist and celebrating today's decision. But he's the one who originally said that these long-standing protections shouldn't apply to broadband networks, and created a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court and created this mess that we face now. But the Obama administration had the opportunity several years ago, back in 2009 and 2010, to reverse the bad decisions of the Bush administration, but they didn't do it because it was considered too politically difficult. And unfortunately, that meant they went back to court with a very weak hand, and the judges really didn't buy the FCC's arguments at all. And now it's important to note, though, that in their decision today, they didn't say that net neutrality was a bad policy or that we shouldn't protect our broadband networks. What they said is the way the FCC was applying its rules and the legal basis for those rules was unfounded. So the judges actually paint a very clear path for what the FCC should do if they indeed do want to protect our internet and broadband networks. The question is whether the FCC, which was about to face an onslaught of lobbying from the phone and cable companies, once again will have the will to actually do it. It's why it's so important that people out there speak, you know, get informed and speak up about this issue.
Again, I'm speaking with Craig Aaron, who's the president and CEO of Free Press and is the editor and co-author of Changing Media, Public Interest Policies for the Digital Age. Before joining Free Press, he was an investigative reporter for Public Citizen's Congress Watch. But in the context of broadband, you have to recognize, or one has to recognize, surely, Craig, that the USA that invented the Internet, and wasn't Al Gore necessarily, but it was invented here in the United States, they are slipping further and further behind the rest of the world in both broadband diffusion and speed. And there are a couple of anomalies, like the city of Chattanooga has made broadband a utility with very, very high speed. And, you know, the French have what, at least 10 times the speed that we have and pay, I think, a quarter of the price that we pay. And when you say that we're heading in the direction of as bad as our cable television is, it's all going to be bundled at any rate by the same people that control the pipe into your home, and you'll get the same lousy service where they'll pick and choose the poverty of choice, as it's known, but what you want to see and what you want to get will be put in the slow lane.
Well, that's absolutely the danger, and today's decision certainly worsens our standing in the world. There's no question about it, because the way that countries like Japan and South Korea and France have built a faster internet that in some cases is twice as fast or far faster than what you get here for half the price, maybe 50 times as fast for half the price, is by actually pursuing the kind of policies we used to have, so-called open access or common carrier policies. And those are the exact policies that come under attack in today's decision. So if the FCC doesn't respond to this decision, the opportunity for competition, the protection against discrimination will go away, and we'll never catch up with the rest of the world. It also, I think, does speak to the importance of municipal alternatives and other networks like they've built in places like Chattanooga, Tennessee, Burlington, Vermont, and elsewhere where, you know, where if the community or the municipality actually controls the network, there may be other ways, other options at least, for people to vote with their feet and different kind of protections that can be imposed. But, of course, these same companies are also fighting everywhere they can, and they've been successful in 18 or 19 states so far in actually preventing these networks from coming online in a lot of places. So the amount of power wielded by the phone and cable lobby is immense. I mean, they spend more money in Washington than any other industry this side of the prescription drug industry, more money than the oil and gas industry spends. So they are a very powerful lobbying force. And so it is an uphill climb, but it's just that important because these are the networks of the future. And the beauty of the free and open Internet is if you have a good idea, if you have an economic innovation, if you have something to say that no one else is saying, you have just as much chance as anybody else to find that audience. But if this decision is allowed to stand, the next Google being developed out in a garage somewhere will never get off the ground. Independent content, independent news and information will never enjoy the same kind of speeds and services the mainstream news outlets and the companies that are controlled by Comcast, NBC, and Verizon, and AT&T, and Time Warner. So there is a lot at stake in this decision, and frankly, a lot at stake in the FCC's ability to do all sorts of things, including expanding broadband, public safety, even privacy. The Communications Act contains a whole sort of privacy protections. A lot of those have been ignored. But if you care about what these companies are doing, what they're handing over to the NSA, you need to care about this court decision today as well.
And this court decision you're referring to is the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, held today that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, does not have the power to mandate so-called net neutrality in a suit brought by Verizon, who are clearly the winner. Now, and Verizon, of course, have sued throughout this country to stop municipalities from having an alternative to their pipe into the homes. And they have successfully done that both at the state level and at the municipal level. Here in California, in Santa Monica, the city of Santa Monica is now putting in high-speed broadband. And guess what? It's attracting all kinds of business because everybody, and let's face it, a lot of people use the Internet nowadays. Every company in the world wants to have this incredibly fast high-speed Internet that, you, as you mentioned, the Japanese have, the South Koreans have it everywhere. It's a right, it's a utility in every home, in every hospital. I mean, the potential, the economic upside of high-speed broadband is extraordinary. And yet these big companies, these American corporations who say that they're capitalists and who say they're for the free enterprise system, are basically writing rules to monopolize their lousy service. That's what it comes down to.
I think that's absolutely correct. They are absolutely attempting to profit from and maintain scarcity because that's the easiest way for them to make money. Unfortunately, that's doing serious damage to our country, to our international competitiveness, to opportunities that face, you know, that entrepreneurs have. I mean, you know, if a kid in South Korea can get to the Library of Congress website faster than a kid a few miles from here and where I am in Washington, D.C., we have a real problem, and that is a problem that is being reinforced by the powerful phone and cable companies who are only interested in their short-term gains. That's why we need a watchdog on the beat. It's why we need a counterweight coming from the Federal Communications Commission. And this is going to be the biggest test yet for that body of whether it is going to exist, whether it's going to be relevant. I mean, the idea that the Federal Communications Commission has no authority over the most important communications network existing is preposterous, and yet that's what we're staring at in the wake of this decision. And it's all the more reason we need them to act and act immediately.
Well, I happen to be a Time Warner Cable customer, and I got hosed like every other consumer did when they had their little spat with CBS, you know, a bunch of corporate lawyers playing fraternity chicken with each other, you know, and they could give a damn about the consumer. This was their own little stit, and we all, you know, were blacked out, and too bad, you know. So that gives you an idea of their attitude, how little they care about their customers.
And it's because they face no competition. You really don't have a choice. Maybe at best you have one other choice, but the cost of switching to you as an individual, especially once you have your cell phone and your home phone and everything else, your internet service, your cable TV, all tied in with one company, is so high that there's no incentive. And yet they're spending all of their energy not making your service faster, not improving your customer service, not taking those 80 and 90% profit margins that they make off your internet service, your modem. They're not putting that back into the product. What they're doing is putting it into lobbying to try to maintain that scarcity and cut off that competition. And these are the companies that have divided up the country so that you only have one choice for cable television. Maybe if you're lucky, the phone company has come in. You have just a handful of choices for your wireless internet. And this is how broken the system has become. But, of course, the pipes that they control are only becoming more important to our lives every day, and I think that's why there's so much at stake here.
And, of course, the former CEO of Verizon apparently was something of a visionary who came up with this Fios, laying all this fiber optic cable. But Wall Street decided that he was thinking too long-term, and they decided to cut him off at the knees and put some flunky in. And, of course, as it ironically, the most profitable part of Verizon's portfolio is its Fios. So, you know, you're dealing with these corrupt dinosaurs like Comcast, NBC, Comcast, Verizon, and Time Warner Cable. And my understanding, Craig, and fill me in on this, if you will, my understanding is it's possible that short of the FCC finding some cojones and doing the public's business instead of rolling over for the big telecom and cable lobbies, short of that, isn't Google putting in fiber optics in a few cities now? And that could do a whole end run around these crooked monopolies that are just gouging us with crappy service?
It certainly has its possibility, and there are a few places, Kansas City, Utah, Austin, Texas is about to come online where Google is getting into the broadband business. And any competition is good competition. So if they're offering, you know, another alternative, that's competitive pressure on the incumbents, and it's a good thing. You know, unfortunately, though, Google in its own way is following some of the bad habits of the incumbents with very restrictions on how you can use the service. And they happen to only be deploying it in places that have deregulated completely. So Google's offering, in some cases, a very good product, but they don't want any of the public service obligations that come with it. And so there's a real risk of a race to the bottom. You know, as a consumer, you benefit from as many choices as possible. And unfortunately, Wall Street believes the exact opposite. And you're seeing it in the cell phone market now, where there actually is some competition because the government did step in and stop some mergers from happening. And yet when Wall Street talks about it, they talk about, you know, lost revenue because consumers actually have choices. That shows you how upside down the calculus is. I think we do want to encourage investors like Google, but we also want to encourage communities building their own systems. You know, really all of the above. The more choices we have as consumers, the better chance we're going to have. And really, it's the most powerful way to rein in this kind of misbehavior and blocking. If I have the option to vote with my feet, if I can go get another provider, then it's a lot harder for Comcast or Verizon or AT&T to start interfering with my content. But if I don't have that choice, and most of the country has at most two choices, and in many places only one choice for truly high-speed internet access, then there's no hope, and then they can do whatever they want, and that's the kind of system that they're trying to entrench.
So it's time for all those netheads to get up off the couch and march on Washington, right?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And we've seen it happen before. I mean, net neutrality is only a national issue because millions of people got involved. We've stopped web censorship bills like the SOPA-PIPA bills. We've seen the incredible public outpouring of against NSA spying and surveillance. And this net neutrality issue needs to be right there. But it is going to take that kind of massive public mobilization, pressure on Congress, pressure on the new leadership of the FCC, if we're going to reverse what happened here today and actually protect Internet users. If we don't do that, if we don't speak out, then we're going to lose, you know, the most remarkable arena for free speech, democratic participation, and economic innovation that we've ever seen.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Craig Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Craig Aaron, who is the president and CEO of Free Press and is the editor and co-author of Changing Media Public Interest Policies for the Digital Age. Before joining Free Press, he was an investigative reporter for Public Citizen's Congress Watch. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking with West Virginia resident Russell McIver, the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter.